others now. It's always a great pleasure. And I'm just going to share you my certain things about the book that you can't hear me? I'm going to share some of the parts of the book that I feel are very important. Now, one of the first parts is in one of the forewords where it says we're 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Yes? You know that one. The word seemingly is important because it means it appears to be true or false to you. So if it was really a hopeless state of mind and body, we'd be really fucked. Yeah. But because it's a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, there is a solution. There's hope. Because when you're under the influence of alcoholism, it can very, very easily seem like it's a hopeless state of mind and body. But when you get recovered from alcoholism, you see that it wasn't a hopeless state of mind and body. So, was it or wasn't it a hopeless state of mind and body? It has a lot to do with us, yeah? And that's the part that I forgot a lot. And in AA, in a way, it talks about responsibility, like in the four columns of the inventory process. But there's a real responsibility of how much you have to do with your own life, in a sense. That you and I are giving everything the meaning it has. Yeah. So if I'm not in, good shape, the way I'm going to view a situation or people is going to be in a different light than when I am in good shape. So let's say on Monday I have a problem and I'm not in very good, quote, spiritual shape. The next Tuesday I feel really good, it isn't a problem. And then Wednesday I'm not feeling good, it is a problem again. Is it a problem or isn't it a problem? Or like a lot of people share, that they had an idea of the worst thing that ever happened to them in their life, yeah? They come into recovery, and then about a year or two later, they say the worst thing that ever happened to them was the best thing that ever happened to them, like getting pulled over by the police or something like that, because it led them to become sober, yeah? So which is it? Is it the worst thing or the best thing? You know? If it was the worst thing, and some people will tell you, they have the worst thing ever happened to them and they build tons of stories on it, yeah? But the fact is, it isn't the worst thing nor the best thing. It's how you see it, yeah? So that's the responsibility, is how you see things, yeah? Now, when I'm taken over by the parasite of alcoholism, and that's what I see it like a mental parasite. It has the nature of a parasite. It tends to suck the host, yeah? It doesn't have that many redeeming qualities. It doesn't really give back much. And it's sort of like if you save a snake and you're really nice to the snake, and you put it in a nice shoebox and you make a little bed for it, and get a little eye drop and you give it milk a couple days, and then you're picking it up to give it a little embrace and it bites you, and you're really surprised, but the snake looks at you and says, hey, I'm a snake. You know, that's my nature. So for me, the alcoholism has this parasitical nature. It's not going to change its stripes. Yeah. And in my experience, when I came in here, when they described the disease of alcoholism, I was very clearly intimate with the irritability, restlessness, and discontent. Yeah. And that feeling of being uncomfortable in one's own skin. And the point was, I had a phase of my life where that wasn't the case when I was a kid. I wasn't in an abusive situation, so I like to say my golden years were between 2 and 4. Because between 2 and 4, everything was really, really bright in a lot of ways. And when I was playing, I didn't have the opportunity to worry about would I be playing next week, because I didn't have time yet. I didn't know there would be a next week, really. And I wasn't walking around my house thinking my room was too small and my mother was ugly, or I should be wearing Gap clothes, you know, when I was 4 or 5 years old, because I didn't have any of that going on. And one of the best things I didn't have going on is I didn't think I could be somewhere else than where I am. Yeah. So when I was playing, my head wasn't thinking I could be at a better place playing at a better thing. I was just playing, you know? And it enabled me to be here without any effort. Yeah, because here was the obvious only place I could be. What happened is, when my mental condition got stronger, and that's what I believe AA does, I don't think it provides a spiritual condition. What it does is it diminishes a mental condition. When the mental condition is diminished enough, the spiritual condition becomes obvious. Yeah? While the mental condition is dominant, the spiritual condition is forgotten, basically. Yeah? And you can't have an extreme mental condition and then expect to produce a spiritual condition. All you'll produce is a conceptual idea of a spiritual condition, which isn't going to hold water. I mean, you'll be doing really good when all the situations, the circumstances are alright, but when the shit hits the fan, it doesn't show up. Yeah. To me, real spirituality is a living experience. It's where the rubber hits the road. It's at Tuesday at 10:30 in the morning, Thursday night at 9:15. It's applicable wherever you are, at any time you're there. That to me is valuable. That's something to rely on. So, you know, I started having that irritability, restlessness, and discontent, and then I went to school, and it got worse, yeah, because now other people are around. And my feeling of myself was that there was something inherently wrong with it. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I definitely thought something was bad about me, and like a moral type bad thing. And I didn't want anyone to see it, so I had to have a really good song and dance, which is what I got into when I was in first grade. I learned how to song and dance and not anyone get to touch that soft little spot, you know, which seemed to be really large and from where I was sitting. Yeah. So I remember when I came in AA, they told me the whole point that obsession with self was the root of the problem. I don't believe that now, but, you know, that I took it to be the case when I came in. And so then I looked at my life about that, and I remembered so many times. I remember one of the best examples was I was walking through the hallway at school when I was about 11 years old, and a girl said hello to me, and I went home and wondered what she meant by it for about 5 hours. Now I went over that one stupid little event with a fine tooth comb, but only in the realm of self-centeredness. I couldn't see it any other way but how it pertained to me. That's the disease of alcoholism. You can't see life any other way but how it pertains to you. You don't have empathy for others, really, because you can't put yourself in their shoes. You know? So I had a lot of those examples, and so I knew, you know, when I came in AA, I was really ready for the solution. I'd say I was overdue for the solution. I had spent 2 years in a drug and alcohol program. Not like, I don't know if it was like this, but it was called Delancey Street. Like, they have a chapter in New York City, too. And I walked into that facility in 1985 looking for a place to stay for one night, and I had to make a 2-year commitment to get that one night of sanctuary. And I ended up staying there for 2 years because I'm not really proud of it, but the type of person I am is I thrive in an institutional setting. You know, when people tell me what to do, I do a lot better than when I'm telling me what to do. And they got my cooperation with severe punishment hanging over my head. And so, from 1988, I came into AA, you know. Okay, I spent 2 years in Delancey Street and 3 months in a place called Project Return when I was younger in the Bronx, another program. And I remember I left Delancey Street after 2 years. I graduated. I graduated with flying colors, basically. I hadn't drank or used in those 2 years. And as soon as I left that program, as soon as I didn't have Delancey Street as the buffer between me and me, that irritability and restlessness and discontent showed up again. And I rented a room under the pretense that the realtor was Dr. Jekyll, but Mr. Hyde was going to be moving in, right? I had gotten a room with these two young girls, and they were very unsuspecting of what was going to happen. As soon as I left, and Delancey Street had been telling me that though the period of being Mr. Hyde was rather long, it was over. I was going to be Dr. Jekyll from now on. But I had a very strong suspicion they were wrong, you know. I left Delancey Street and Mr. Hyde showed up. As soon as I got out of that place, I didn't know what to do with myself after work, really. That's what really flipped me out of time, you know. So that mind started running an advertising campaign, what I'd been missing for the last few years, without saying anything specific, like getting run over by cars and shit like that, but made it more like a romantic missing, you know, all the lovely picnics I used to go on and stuff like that. So I believed it, and I drove down to this bar with my car. I had a Toyota Corolla. That was one of the requirements. I worked out for 4 months in Delancey Street, and they helped me save my money. And I had to get, before I graduated, I had to get a car, a checking account, yeah, and then find a place to live, and then I could graduate. And so I had a car, but I lost it 2 nights later, as soon as I went to this bar. And I went to the bar, and I had come to the conclusion when I was in Delancey Street that my problem was narcotics. And that was true. But I had made a little amendment that I could probably drink. And I didn't run this by anyone in the facility. I just stored it in my own little library. And I walked into this bar with that idea that I can probably drink, you know. And I can drink. I have the ability to drink. I hadn't lost that. I have the ability to do it. So I ordered a beer, and I drank the first beer, and nothing happened. It was really cool. You know, I felt really pretty good. It tasted all right. I actually never really liked the taste that much, but it was pretty cool. And, the AA police didn't rush in. Nothing happened. So I ordered a second beer, and I swear, man, halfway through the second beer, it wasn't enough. I needed more, you know. And then that's what happened. I saw a more dealer in the place. I think he's still selling more there. He's got a franchise. I asked for some more, and then he gave me very little of more, basically, like usual. Always a little less than you want. So I went in my car, and I did a little line of more, and it was like that movie The Shining, when Jack Nicholson breaks through the bathroom door in the end and goes, "Here's Johnny." That's what it was like. The parasite truly woke up, and it just clinged, you know, the tentacles came over me, and I went on a 10-month run. And it only lasted 10 months because I had 2 years of health, really. By the time I was done, I was really fucking done. You know, I was in a trailer park. I had left San Francisco. 4 days later, I ended up in a trailer park in a town about 2 hours north of San Francisco. I didn't know how I got there, but I was there. And I was drinking a bottle of vodka with another guy who I didn't know, waiting for a mutual acquaintance. And I looked at this guy, and he had a big bulbous nose and veins on his face. And I said to myself, "This guy's a bum." And lo and behold, he was looking back at me like I was a bum. And that was the moment of clarity. And that was an incredible event in hindsight. If I would have kept on using and drinking, it would have just been a little blip on the screen, like a little speed bump. But because I didn't drink anymore and use, that moment I recognized the value of it. And it was like a portal opened up. Yeah? And I was sitting there, and it wasn't produced by a bottom. I had moved into bottoms. Yeah, I had put, you know, curtains on my bottoms and invited you over. The only problem was I get evicted from the bottom to a worse bottom. But I had totally given up all hope anything was going to get better. I was just trying to survive between the next institution, jail, or death. You know, so it had nothing to do with any. I wasn't driven to get sober. I wasn't thinking about it. I was just thinking about how can I get some drugs without having any money. You know. So this little portal opened up and some information downloaded. But for it to download, something had to stop. And the selfing, which is what I call the disease of alcoholism, yeah? That K-pol station, yeah? The frequency got blocked. So for 2 minutes, I wasn't getting the K-pol product and all its little, you know, the world news from K-pol and stuff and Paul's news from K-pol. Something broke through that frequency, and something downloaded, and then I didn't pick up the drink. I didn't pick up the next offer of the bottle. And I went to the phone booth outside, and I called Delancey Street. Now, I wasn't thinking of this 2 minutes before, and I called them and asked if I could come back. But they'd been following my newsletter for the last 10 months, and they said, "No, you can't come back. You can maybe come back in a month for an interview." Yeah. And so at this point, some honesty flooded in, and I told them, "I don't think I have a month, really." You know, like my muscles of denial were like Arnie Schwarzenegger's, but they collapsed with this truth came in. So I called up. Well, what happened is, from that point on, trains of circumstances occurred that brought me to my first meeting the next day, the next night in San Francisco, under the same deal of needing a place to stay that I made with Delancey Street. I made a 2-year commitment. a woman gave me that same deal and only asked for me to go to an AA meeting. I thought that was incredible progress. Yeah, 1 hour I can handle. You know? So I went to that meeting. It was a men's meeting. She dropped me off. She didn't even come in. And I haven't drank or used since then. But what occurred is, now I've been sober like 24 years, but that the germ or the seed of that sobriety came in that little 5-minute download. Yeah, could you imagine if you paid attention to that, from where that came, what your life may look like, the possibilities that could break into your life? It took that little 5 minutes, demonstrated on the biggest theater, the biggest stage of my life was active alcoholism and addiction, and put it to a stop that day. And the solution is still active for 24 years. Yeah. So what happened, I went to that first meeting, and I listened, and I felt some hope, which I hadn't had in a long time. And to tell you the truth, the hope let me actually feel how hopeless I was. Mm. It gave me permission to really feel how bad it was. Yeah. And, you know, I just started off. I had nothing. I stayed with this lady for a couple weeks. She helped me move into a residence hotel. I got a job. I bluffed my way into house painting. I couldn't build a brush. You know, I had no ability to cut a line, but I bluffed my way into a job. I remember I got my first little ghetto blaster, got a little tape of one of my favorite bands. All that had gone, you know. Everything you love gets sucked into that hole of alcoholism and addiction. And then my life just started to blossom. And when my life started to blossom, my mind started to wake up to what the disease is. Yeah. And over the years, I came to another conclusion in my own investigation that it isn't really obsession with self, yeah, but it's identification as a self, which is a little different. Actually, it's hugely different, but it's a little different in a way. Because if you're obsessed with self, just like when I was obsessed with coke, which I was extremely obsessed with cocaine, but I never became coke. I never thought I was cocaine. I never went that far in that obsession. Well, we start off at that farness. We're identified with the disease. Yeah? The disease has a picture of you, and we're taking that picture to be us. It's a mental picture. It's drawn every day through the thought system. Yes? Something. It's sort of like a Barbie doll or a Ken doll. Different uniforms are added and taken off. Then you may drive a different car, but it's the same fucking doll, you know? And if you're identified as self, then the term self can't get out of self becomes very, very, very applicable. Yes? And it will drive you crazy why you can't get better under your own devices. Yeah? That actually you listening to yourself is one of the main activities of the disease. Yeah? And that whole idea of self can't get out of self, in a way, can be a super drag, but it's a huge blessing. Because if you're not that which you think you are, then you're already out of it. Yeah? The beauty thing is that you've never been in it. Yeah? That's the solution. The best solution I ever found to get out of something is to realize you're not in it. Yeah? Doesn't take any time. Yes? All you need to do is remind yourself you're not in it. Yes? Now, you're not going to mind yourself if your mental condition is very amplified, because that's going to keep blaring its story of life. But the 12 steps diminish that condition, and then your real nature starts illuminating your own life. And I don't believe your nature is mental, nor is it physical. I would say it's more spiritual. Yeah? That spiritual aspect of your life, if you want to call it an aspect, now starts becoming much more influential, and you show the results of it in your life. You travel lighter. Yes? Mm. You're able to enjoy peace of mind. Just like it says, all those descriptions of what happens to us in the book come true. You will lose interest in the self and gain interest in others. You will lose interest in your little plans and designs. And when you're in self, what plans and designs were ever little to you? Yeah? They're always fucking important and big. All that shifts. Your mind shifts, and therefore everything else shifts, because everything actually issues off from mind. Yeah? So, that's what I've been entertaining for years, and it's verified itself. just travel lighter on a consistent basis. That irritable restlessness and discontent flipped over. Now there's usually the state of being at ease and comfort. Yeah? Every once in a while, things jack up and anxiety may arise, but it doesn't go back resting into a sea of fear. It gets sort of, it goes back into the state of faith and then dissolves quickly. Yeah, pretty cool. So that's how I feel confident in the diagnosis, and I believe it's important to make the right diagnosis about really what this disease is about. Just like we were thinking it was drinking and using, and they shed light on that pretty quickly in the book. They say the drinking and using is just a symptom. Yeah, so we get that misidentification out of the way. Then they start talking about, well, it's not this and that, but it's obsession with self. Selfishness, self-centeredness will kill us. Resentment's the number one offender. All that stuff. Okay, so what I believe is that obsession with self is how the mind stays identified as a self. Yeah? Without the obsession, without the constant gluing of you to the idea of being a self, which they talk about in the book, please relieve us of the bondage of self. What is that bondage of self? What is it? I would say there's an idea called self, and there's what we are, and then the thought system, that yapping all day, it's perception and it's belief that you're the subject, you're the doer, you're the having, you're this and that, is what bonds you to the idea of being a self. And if you ask everyone in this room, if they're coming from recovery, they will say, all right, so what self-defeated you? Everyone would have the same answer. Myself, yeah? My self. My. My. That's the important word, yeah? My. In other words, there's a claiming of something you're not to be either yours or you. That's how self-defeated me. I was identified as it, yeah? That's why every path I practice would fail because it would be self trying to get out of self, which is an impossibility. If your mental process is producing the feeling of being you, then that feeling of being you can't leave the mental process because that's the only way place it appears. You know what I mean? I remember when I was in Delancey Street. When I left, I was, you know, I didn't really like them or anything, and I didn't like their principles, but I had to admit that my life was better with them running it than it ever did with me running it. Because when they looked at me, they saw me as exactly what I was, a junkie alcoholic, right? When I responded to their looks, I thought, I beg to differ with you, it's me. I'm very special and unique. You cannot understand me. You don't feel the way I feel. You don't think the way I think. I am incredibly unique, yes? And you know what? It was that uniqueness that was killing me, and their not seeing that uniqueness, which is what was saving me. They saw me exactly what I was, which was a drawn-out junkie. But in my head, it's Paul portraying a junkie, or Paul, you know? This is the disease of obsession with self.
So how did you create distance?
I didn't create distance. But just like it says in the book, you'll be placed in a position of neutrality. If you read the product, if you read the descriptions of what happens to you, you usually have nothing to do with it. You just do the work, and then it says things will happen to you with no thought or effort on your part. The mind shifts. Yeah. So the space, if I could have created a space, I would have a long time ago. I can't create the space. The whole point is, if I do the steps, it diminishes my mental condition. My spiritual condition is like a sun that rises. It illuminates my life. Where before it was dark and I was living by the light of this fucking pseudo-moon called Paul. It was informing me like the Greek oracle what was going on. It doesn't have a freaking clue. But as soon as the sun arises, then there's illumination. Just like if we were in this room and it was dark and the lights couldn't come back on, we'd have a lot of problems in this room. If you wanted to go to the bathroom, you'd run in a few people, and they may get mad at you. You hit your knee on the furniture, right? Somebody, some entrepreneur type would be selling you, you know, maps to the bathroom. I saw it once. I think I remember where the bathroom is. Here, $5, or become a guide and try to take you to the bathroom. Yeah? And then what happens? Well, we do. We try to hunker down in it. We get knee pads. We make some convoluted way to how to make a, you know, a blanket apology before we hit anybody, instead of just switching on the lights. Turn the freaking light on, you'll be seeing. You're not blind. Self-centeredness is a form of looking that blinds us to our natural state, which is seeing. I'm telling you, I've seen it.
One more time.
Self-centeredness is a form of looking. It's like, you ever hear of that guy Chuck C, the new pair of glasses? He's a guy who was in AA down in L.A. area, and he passed away. He wrote a nice book called A New Pair of Glasses by Chuck Chamberlain, Chuck C. In that, he's talking about AA like a new pair of glasses, right? So you put on AA, and the AA glasses correct the distortion of the other pair of glasses you have on, which is self-centeredness, yes? So the self-centeredness is a disease that's affecting the perceptions and the thoughts, yeah? It's a mental disease. You can't take an x-ray of alcoholism. You'll see its effects in a body, but you can't find alcoholism in the body because it's not of the body. It's of the mind. Yeah? It's a mental disease. Yes? So here, this alcoholism has an incredible strategy. Let's say if a big bug flew in this room right now, a really big bug, landed on you. Would you think about it, or would you have an immediate reaction to get it off? Yeah? Most people would, you know, just try to get it off immediately. Yes? Like this. The parasite of alcoholism, you tell me anyone who was treated well by that parasite. Any host that was treated wonderfully by the parasite of alcoholism in their life. Not one. Yes? It has to have an incredible strategy for the host not to throw it off. What does it do? It convinces the host that it's the host. Your head has a picture of you, tons of ideas about you, conditioning about you, and that's what we're taking ourselves to be. And every time this thing's driving us crazy, the only way we can think of it is, we think we're trying to get relief from it, but we're getting relief for it. We're getting therapy for it. We're trying to civilize what cannot be civilized. The parasitical nature isn't going to switch. Yeah? You can socialize it to an extent, just like Delancey Street, but as soon as I got out of Delancey Street, it took me over right away in less than a week. I had no immunity to it. It just took over K-Paul again. Da-da-da. I bought right into it, and there I went. Yeah? Alcohol cannot drink. It needs you, the host, to get the fuel. It has to convince you to drink against incredible amount of evidence that it would be crazy to do so. Yeah? It can't shoot up. It needs you to put it in your arm so that it gets off on it. It has to convince you to go to the 7-Eleven to buy that alcohol. Yeah? And you'll see it. A lot of times it's like an advertisement, yeah? As soon as it takes you over, it's talking as you. There's no more convincing anymore. It's running, yeah? You're on a fucking run. Mm-hmm. As soon as you take that drink, as soon as it gets its fuel, it's like genie comes out of the bottle. It's over. It's a done deal. And if someone tries to help you, they're not going to make any sense to you until the run's over, usually, yeah? And who says when the run's going to be over? The gorilla does. The gorilla decides when the dance is over. The parasite does. Yes? I got run over twice in one night. Only alcoholics. That only happens to alcoholics. And I got run over by an alcoholic, a drunk driver. So it was like unbelievable. Got run over, didn't know why he ran over, he backed up over me. This is what happens in an alcoholic life. This isn't child's play, man. It's taking away our lives. It's sucking us dry. For some of us, the only place it dawns on us is in AA. Because when I came into AA, I had an extreme case of terminal uniqueness. And then I would hear people share, and after a few months, I came to two conclusions. Either, how did they get my thoughts and my feelings and my reactions to life? Because they sure sound like they have the same ones. Or they're not my thoughts, my feelings, and my reactions. Bingo. They were alcoholic thoughts and feelings and reactions. And I realized, I'm not identifying with anyone in this room with who they are, but I identify with what's taking them over. Because the same fucking parasite took me over. So when you share what it was like to live under that parasite, I identify, because I've been living under the same parasite. Be it in Bombay, New York, California, it doesn't matter. Yeah? It's the same parasite. It doesn't have an infinite amount of characteristics. It's been written about in the big book. It has been actually revealed. They describe the beast so that we can recognize it. And hopefully the recognition will go as far as, I'm not that. Yeah? I'm not that. As soon as my mind got to I'm not that, the next thing it could entertain, hey, I can be free of it. Yeah? Before that, I can only entertain being free as it, which never worked out. Yeah? But as soon as I entertain, hey, I may not be that, I can be free of it. Once I entertain the possibility I can be free of it, the diminishing of the mental state really allowed that sun to shine. Yeah. And the light itself is the validation. The light itself is the verification. The sense of traveling lighter when you have a deep, deep, intimate memory of how heavy it used to fucking be every day. Yeah. So a lot of things became obvious to me. One of the biggest one was this whole idea of being in the moment, you know? Mm. There's all these books about being in the moment, and then you buy the first one, How to Be in the Moment. Then the second edition is How to Really Be in the Moment. Then the third edition is How to Really, Really Be in the Moment. Yeah? And it dawned on me, I can't possibly be out of a moment. Then why the hell am I trying to be in it? I found out that my attempt to be in the moment was another form of being out of the moment. Because I was entertaining impossibilities that I could be anywhere other than where I am. It's an impossibility. Yeah. And conversely, I realized that trying to get out of self all day, let's say if I signed up for a 2-year course on how to get out of obsession with self, that could be seen as obsession with self. Yeah. So the realization was, it's much wiser to see that you're not in something than to try to keep getting out of what you're not in. Yeah? To me, it saves you a lot of time if you realize you cannot be a self. No matter how much you think yourself is that, no matter how much you perceive others as a self, no matter how much your memory says you're a self, you know, identified as a body, that desire of the mental process will never be fulfilled because you do have a nature, not of thingness. You know, you are conscious. Yeah. I took a thing that they say in the book, improve your conscious contact with that higher power, yeah? But I believe that's the raw data of life, is consciousness and contact. Seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, touching. That's my life. Am I the one that's in contact, or is it consciousness? If you want to use the word God, am I am the one who's in conscious contact with life, or is God in contact with life through me? I would say the latter. I would say God is that consciousness. God is that spirit that's looking out of every one of our eyes right now. Yes? Now what? There's also a mental interpretation that makes us feel like we're different, but the raw data of life is consciousness first. Yeah? The mental process never starts before the consciousness. It comes after the consciousness. Yeah? So that conscious contact is the constant revelation of my own nature. I am of no thingness. I am of awareness. I am of consciousness. My way of looking at it is I'm not of mind. I'm not of a mental process. I am not a fucking mental idea. I am not a body. Yeah? And then by entertaining those possibilities, other downloads occur that they're like revelations. Like it says, more will be revealed. That's what happens. More is revealed. Yeah? You just maintain that spiritual condition, which is just a diminishing of the mental condition, and then the spiritual condition is available. Yeah. If the mental condition gets too powerful, it will appear to be true to you that it's not available. It's actually available, but the seemingly will be very strong, so it will appear that you are disconnected from life or God, but it's just an appearance in your own head. The fact is, you can't be disconnected from what you are. Yeah. So for me, the spirit is always available at all times, right where I am, with no requirement necessary to meet it, because I'm way past the point of meeting it. I am it. Yeah. It's worked. What can I say? I mean, that's the proof in the pudding, really. This will all sound good, but I've lived it now. I haven't lived it. It's been living for a long time. And AA is the perfect... It's like AA allows me to be a free-range alcoholic. You know what I mean? It puts fences up that aren't seen as fences. Like, if I shot coke right now, all bets would be off. So that fence is there, you know? I'm not going to sleep with my best friend's girlfriend because that would produce too much drama. That would be... See, to me, alcoholism is like a big dog, yeah? And it's asleep right now. We all have this huge house, but when the big dog's awake, I can't enjoy the huge house because I gotta clean up after that dog all day. I gotta walk it, and it's biting friends and foe and everything together. It's biting me. Yeah? It's like a full-time job just to keep that dog somewhat at bay. What happens though is AA allows that dog to go to sleep, yeah? While the dog's asleep, I got the run of the house. I got the run of my life. Yes? But if I throw a bone anywhere near it, it may wake up and then all hell can break loose. I've seen it over and over again, especially with people at Time, where I'm from. My first fairy princess in AA, she said 22, she went out after 21 years. And she's had a hell of a time getting sober again. She just keeps going back and forth, went to an expensive place in Utah, got low, drank again. She's just announced she had 30 days left. Like 2 weeks, a week before I went on this trip, and we were talking about it, and she's lost that sense of the contentment that she had, that obsession had been lifted, and she was enjoying a sense of lightness in her life, and now that it's gone, she can't seem to get it, or she can't seem to access it anymore, and it shows in her face and everything. She's just burnt out. So it's not just opening up to this, but honoring, you know. And once you honor that, you'll honor what allows that to be so. And for me, that's the AA program. Because you can run a beautiful program from your living room, yeah. But the real program's out here with other alcoholics, you know. That sense of getting out of oneself as a lifestyle, you know, as a service, is I think paramount for the minds that we've been. That have taken us over. We need to do service. It just works for us, yeah? And for me, the idea of service, it used to always provide an experience for me. I would do it, and I looked at it over the years, and what I would feel would be available when I was doing service. I'd come out of the ass of self, and I'd feel a little available, let's say, to another person at least. And that felt like spacious, you know? It felt pretty good. And then in that space, I would sense a presence that I could deem the higher power. Yeah, and it was had a pretty good batting average. Every time I basically did service, that event would occur. I'd feel available, and I'd sense a presence of a higher power. Then one time, when I sensed the presence of the higher power, my mind just said, I'm that. Yeah, I'm that which I'm thinking I'm having an experience. I'm actually that. And when that occurred, then I saw that, because that presence is a beautiful statement of its own nature. It's present, right? When I'm present, I'm available. And when I'm available, I'm of service. Yeah? It's much more established than having an experience of service. It's sort of living in a state of service. Just like after you do a lot of gratitude lists and a lot of demonstrations, your life happens. Then every once in a while, the gratitude gets like infused in your attitude. Yeah. In other words, the way you're looking at life is from a grateful point of view now, instead of a sense of entitlement and a sense of greed, where the experience of gratitude when I was coming from there was really great, but it was just an experience. It would dissipate quickly. Now I don't have that really great experience, but I have like a state of gratitude. I find it a lot better. Yeah. Because it's like the takeover, like it says in the book. When you take this position of relying on something greater than self, right? When you take it sincerely, all this stuff will happen. Then it says when you get established in it, all this other stuff will happen. That's what happens. And if when you stay established in it, all this other stuff's going to happen. To the point where the problem will not exist for us anymore. Yeah? And that's really sweet, isn't it? I found that stabilizes when it doesn't exist as us. Yeah. When you've seen the parasite for what it is, which is a foreign installment, it has nothing fucking to do with you, really. When you see it that way and that vision can hold, the problem doesn't exist for you anymore because it doesn't exist as you. You cease fighting everyone and everything. Yeah, you're placed in a position of neutrality with no thought or effort on your part. You're reborn. Exactly. That's the beauty of that book. I have an intimate sense of every description of every problem in that book and also every description of the solution. I've never met a book that gets anywhere close to that. Intimately, every problem and every solution. And the solutions are really a byproduct of the solution, right? They're all just effects of a solution. When the mind shifts, this is what's going to happen. If you try to force that thing that's going happening, right, without the mind shifting, that would be self trying to get out of self. It won't work. But when the mind shifts out of self, this is what's going to happen. Yeah.
You're talking about the new pair of glasses book?
Oh, the new pair of glasses book. Yeah, he was talking about the distortion of self-centeredness, yeah, or alcoholism. Then you put on AA, and then it corrects the distortion. I'm actually trying to talk a little farther than that. I think the first pair of glasses can be taken off. What you're calling you.
What book are you talking about?
The new pair of glasses. Oh, the big book, yes. This book, yes. New pair of glasses is just, I like that title, a new pair of glasses. What happened with me is the assumption that the first pair of glasses were my eyes never actually allowed me to entertain, hey, this could be taken off. That's because it was identification as. Just like it says in the book, I think it says, we are not people with problems, but we are the problem. Now, how could you be the problem and then get a relief from it? Unless the problem is identification as something, and when you realize you're not that, that's the solution. Yeah. Everything else would be you have a problem, and if you dealt with that problem, you'd be fine. We realize that doesn't work, does it? We stopped drinking and using. And I expected everything to be really good after that. I did. And man, I had a rude awakening when the same shit was coming up that I blamed on cocaine use and everything else was coming up when I was stone cold sober for 4 or 5 years. So for me, the activity of the disease is managing, you know, playing God. I think the playing God is the biggest unspoken step of the book. Because it precedes the biggest principle of the book, which is turning your will and your life over to the care of a higher power. It says first, you've got to quit playing God, and then next, we do that step. Yeah? Because I believe if you don't look at the playing God, then what will be turning its will and life over is the problem. And it's going to be turning its will and life over to a God of its own making. Yeah? That God may get you a parking space in front of the meeting, or maybe a one-month relationship, or... You know, you won't go to jail maybe, but I mean, severely limiting the possibilities of its effect on you. I come to the conclusion of, I want to have a God of its own understanding. Yeah? I don't want to have my understanding framing the effects of God in my life. I want to have its understanding downloading in my life. Yeah? And therefore I find out, and it's incredibly wonder and awe-provoking when you see... You know, what can happen with a life as like mine, how it can change so dramatically over 20-something years. So, yeah. Any questions tonight? I'm tired. I was in Toronto last night.
So basically speaking, if I got this right, and I'll give you an example of it. Manny drunk.
That's the example.
And I was deciding what I was going to wear to come here. So making a decision, and when I decided to put on the T-top, it was to dress up in the front. And I decided to wear a T-shirt to be neutral.
Yeah. How's that worked out for you?
Well.
Oh, there you go.
And that's what you're saying. The whole idea is going to a place where I'm thinking that this is who I am and this is what I'm going to represent, rather than not letting something that I put on from the outside be the dictation of who I am.
Yeah, it's sort of like
or putting up a front as a result of whatever I think I'm going to experience because I'm coming to my hometown area. I lived here. I remember what it was like. In some aspect, it's still not better. So I had this idea of creating this front of defense.
Yeah, so that would be called, in a sense, relying on self, right?
Right.
So you're relying on self to navigate your night for you with the hopes that it will bring you to the harbor of delight, let's say. Which usually it would be a prison cell for my little
correct.
Captain of the
and that's basically a lot of what you've been hitting right now has been probably the last several weeks of me trying to the efforts of my identification, trying to find out and understand who I am, where I stand with things, and where I've been consumed with self, with the ideas of what's going on up in my head.
Yeah.
And that's been like torture, ongoing torture. Can't get past self, or making efforts at passing, getting past an idea of self. And of course, it's me still trying to get past me, which,
right.
If I understood it right, that's what you're referring to.
Well, you understand it more intimately. You've been living it. That's the best understanding. You see, it says in the book, it says, a beautiful statement, it says, why are you in so much fear today? It asks a simple question. It doesn't let us answer, which was a good move. He immediately answers it for us. He says, isn't it because self-reliance has failed us? Yeah? So if you expound on that, it would mean that self-reliance is a failed system, and that's what it's going to produce, is anxiety if you rely on it. Yeah?
Yep.
You're going to be worried that his plans aren't going to work out because they didn't work out. It's not like, you know. And so, therefore, it's a failed system, and we're showing the effects of that failed system. It's just like if there was this tree here, let's say this was a rose bush, and it was in a very small pot with not much soil and not much light and wasn't getting watered much, that rose bush wouldn't bloom, yeah? Now, if the rose bush had self-centeredness, it would be blaming itself, would be being the only rose bush that never blooms and envious of all the other rose bushes blooming and all the bugs are going to those rooms. What about me and this and that, yes? And it would seem to be as real as real to it, but if you just took it, even if it was while it was yapping, if you took it and put it in a bigger pot, put some nice soil in there, yeah? Give it some water and some light, it's going to be blooming. Isn't that the story of your life? I was a down-and-out, junky, washed-up character. I thought my whole life was pointless and useless, had no value. I basically threw it on the dustbin. AA recycled it, reclaimed it, and brought out a lot of value out of that ashes that I thought were worthless. Yes? That's the whole point. Now I'm relying on something other than self, and I'm showing the effects, just like I showed the effects when I was relying on self. Yeah. You know what I mean? You and I, I don't believe, are the cause. We're an effect. Mind is the cause. What the mind is resting on is going to show through us, and we're going to be the vehicle for its expression. But it's the mind. So if the mind is taking itself to be something that it's not and relying on that to be the case, to be true, then it's going to have a life of anxiety, perceived threats, greed and envy because it's going to be afraid it's not going to get what it wants and lose what it has. All of these are qualities of mind that's resting in a failed system. A failed system, simple like this. Let's say you're a furniture store. And every time someone orders a piece of furniture, you deliver it on time, It's not scratched. Yes? Comes in perfectly. Would that company need excuses, rationalizations, and blame? No, because they deliver the goods. Look at your head. Is it filled with excuses, rationalization, and blame?
Yep.
That's the smokescreen to cover up it can't deliver the fucking goods. It's a failed system. When you see it's failed, it can be very demoralizing to it. But it's a brand new day for you, seriously. Look at how far you come just when you get sober. Just watch the guy, he was in prison. I live in a house. I rent a room, and the lady's got 27 years of sobriety, and the other people that live on the property are in recovery. So she had an old childhood friend who was a drug dealer, Mitch, and he went to prison on a drug charge a couple of years. And she was corresponding with him, and she said, listen, when you can stay at the house when you get out, but you've got to go to AA, give it a shot, yeah? So he did. This was 8 years ago. This guy was blaming the world, you know? People stole his Porsche, they sunk his sailboat, you know, the authorities confiscated all his money and everything like that. Pissed, blaming everyone. Wouldn't do a damn thing for anybody. Put himself in AA 8 years later. I heard him share. I went to hear him share at a big meeting. And he was a high school dropout. He now got... He went back to college, stayed sober for 8 years now, went back to a community college for 3 years. He now got accepted at a very prestigious college in California called University of California, Berkeley. Yeah? This is from a junkie. 8 years sober. And I've seen the quality of the character change like a slow ripening fruit over 8 years. And I've seen it hundreds, thousands of times. If you come here and you allow your alcoholism to be given over to AA, what you are will be stilled away from it. You'll be separated from it. And you'll be really free, incredibly pleasantly surprised and wrong quite a lot what can happen in your life. Yeah. I just think it's important to have the right diagnosis, because if you think you have a cold and buy a lot of cold medicine and you don't, you have a flu, let's say, the cold and the flu may have some symptoms that are, you know, alike, but not all. You're not going to get relief from the cold because you misdiagnosed it. You're taking it to be a flu. But if you take it to be a cold and take the same amount of money and spend it on cold medicine and take that religiously, you'll probably get a lot more relief. This to me was just a correction of the diagnosis in my view. I just didn't believe it was obsession with self. I believed that it's identification as self. Yeah? In other words, I assume I'm the Paul that my mind projects. Yeah? And I wasn't that Paul when I was a kid. So I outgrew that and I grew into this state. And if I grew into this state, I can grow out of it again. Yeah? But I need freaking help. Because self can't get out of self. If I'm already indoctrinated and taking myself to be that, then when I'm trying to leave it, I'm taking myself to be that that's leaving. It's, you can't leave that as that. Self can't get out of self. I tried it. I mean, that's what my drug addiction was. And that's one thing I can say. I was a perfect drug addict. I'd match my devotion to drugs with any spiritual devotee in the histories of spirituality. I surrendered every fucking thing to it. I prostituted myself for it every fucking day. There was no low I couldn't go to get more of it, yeah? And I tell you, you can't transcend an imaginary place. You can't get out of self as self. Or I would have, yeah? And so would have you. So AA is just a beautiful way of life that allows you to blossom, you know? If you don't step on it yourself, just stay out of your own way by realizing it's not your way. Life's not happening to you, it's happening, yeah? Mm. Not to you. That's the story of self. So there is a solution. It's a living one. Because you weren't bonded to self sometime in the past. It's an active bonding. Yeah, the glue has to be reapplied all the time because it's not a natural fit. Spirit and body don't mix, really, in a sense. So the glue is of the mental processing, yeah? The perceptions, the thoughts, the interpretations of everything that it's claimed. Feelings, time, my problem, thoughts, my thoughts, yes? You see it? There's a movement. The mind, conscious contact, there's a consciousness of thought. The mental process claims it and says, I'm the thinker. Now the thoughts become yours, yeah? The body becomes yours. Feelings become yours. I saw it very simply with girlfriend. It's very easy. I had a really nice time with this woman for a while. Great girlfriend. Then one day, in my mind, she became my girlfriend. Then I think I have the right to break into her internet, you know, and check her emails to see what my girlfriend is on contact. And I feel like I have a permanent spot in front of my girlfriend's house to watch over my girlfriend. You know what I mean? This is the insanity. As soon as the my glomps on to anything, problem, thought, feeling, it becomes something different. Yes? And invariably, it gets heavier. Invariably. Thought, I can travel with a thought. My thought, fuck it. So I want to get out of there. Feeling, oh, it's feeling comes and goes. My feeling, oh, I've been like this forever. I've always felt like this. I haven't always felt like anything. Really. There's no always with feeling and thought. They're not constant. There's only always in consciousness. That's why it's reliable. It's always available at all times because it's always available at all times. Yeah. Every moment of my life is brought by consciousness. So I would say that's the spirit, the living spirit. You want to call it God? Who cares what you call it? It's the intimacy with it that matters. Yeah? Mm-hmm. You want to call it a relationship or a dissolving in or a recognition of, whatever word you want to put on it. But it, what is it unless it's applicable? What is it unless it's where the rubber meets the road? What value does it have as a philosophical fucking idea that you beat other people up with? And yourself with when you can't live up to those philosophical ideas? Or is it a way that allows you to travel lighter through the terrain, through the geography of your life? It's not going to change the geography. You may get fired, you may marry, you may not. Maybe your child will die. But you'll travel lighter over the geography of your life. What more do we want? And when you recognize, you will recognize how heavy you were traveling when you start traveling lighter. You can't do justice about how heavy it is to travel when you're traveling heavily. You just cannot even get close. It's, you know the problem from the solution. When you start getting relief from the problem, you really know the problem. You go, fucking, they were on the money. That's why I felt it needed a little different calibration, because in my experience, it was an obsession. It was identification as. Yeah? So see, what happens if you could hold a thought as just a thought instead of yours? Yeah? Well, when you see it, the vague feeling that you're the doer. Do you have a vague feeling that you're the digester of the burrito you ate tonight? No, you don't have that, right? You may have a feeling you bought the burrito, that you wanted the burrito, but after it passes here, it's all involuntary, right? Because, oh, it's a physical activity. It would be funny if I go, hey, I'm sorry, I got to leave early. I got that burrito from yesterday. I forgot the digest. Give me an hour, I'll be back, right? It's a big one. It was a grande. I've got to sort of sit for a while. And everyone would laugh and go, ha, 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 ha. But a much subtler process of the body-mind, the brain, thinking, we believe we're the one who's doing it. Yeah, but we think it would be absurd to think that we're the one who's digesting the food or pumping the blood or beating the heart. But then a very subtle activity called thinking, we believe we're the thinker. Yeah? Jesus Christ. Why? Because the thinking is the introduction and the doorway to the mental realm, and that's where self abides. Self lives in your mind. It lives in the past and the future. When you travel in the past and the future, there is no God but self there. You don't have a future God or a present God. You're in self. It thrives in what's not happening. because that's where it can be pictured. You can sit here and think about you as a body somewhere else at some other time, anytime, anywhere else. And then all the thoughts will start circling around that. Because why? Because it's about you, and you're identified with that you. If you weren't that you, you'd have immunity to that trip. Your attention would stay here. Not by any vigilance or any practice, just by the obviousness that this is the only thing that's actually happening. All that is what's not happening. Yeah? You're not going to have to train your attention to be here. The mind has trained the attention to be other places. We're just going to attempt to break that, and then the attention will follow, come right back here, because this is all there is. And when you're attending here, your life will be enriched. When you tend to those little harvests, those little crops, all you get is the crops of regret and resentment and anxiety and hope and I wish things will be better, I will be okay, I was once okay, but you're not okay. It's a form of slavery. Watch it. Selfing is a form of slavery and enslaves your attention to a dead idea. On and on, over and over again, the same old, same old. When someone else comes over your house and talks about themselves, that little self thing, you're bored in a minute, you know? But you've been listening to Kate Ward, Kate Steve, Kate Mary for 50 years as an ardent devotee. Why is that? One, you take to be about you, the other, you take it to be about them. You have immunity to the them, but not to the you. We're just switching it up. That you is going to be looked at like a them, and you'll have the same immunity. You'll lose interest in it. You really will. It's so freaking boring to begin with. You'll lose interest in it. Your mind will, Jesus Christ, again? You want to provoke anxiety again about what's going to happen to me next year? Really? Come on. Pull another card out, you know? Let's get creative at least. You know what I mean? Okay, let's same old thing. I'm afraid. It's like our prayer. Our prayer posture is this instead of this. You know, this. Yes. What's going to happen to me? This is just incredible. It's a form of fucking slavery. This is the whole program is about being relieved of the bondage of self. That's the program. Please relieve us of the bondage of self. So that what? We can better do thy will. Yeah. So that our victory of whatever will be a shining light to others who are suffering from the same plight. Because there's no difference between you, me and you except consequences. I just did a talk in San Quentin, a big prison, you know, federal prison. I think it's state or federal in California. And I'm in a very rich county, California. They have tons of meetings. And what they say is, there's one joke, it says, that when they tell their story, it's like, what happened, what it's like now, and what were they wearing? So I go into this prison. There's 150 inmates in this meeting, AA meeting. And I honestly said, this is the best meeting I've been to in Marin. This is the friendliest. I feel more at peace here than all the other fucking meetings. You know, everyone's looking you in the face, shaking your hand. It was beautiful. There was so much light in that place. Yeah. This is AA, man. This is the tradition that says a loving God will express itself through our group conscience. When we're put together, we're much larger than the individual aspects, yeah? Because some power magnifies itself, its presence, through our little magnifying glasses. It shines in, and we're all sitting here, and a present gets produced here. And it's like manna from heaven for someone who's suffering from self-centeredness, yeah? And it's available every day all around the place. All around the world. You can come to a meeting. It's like a manipulated pause, no matter how bad it's going. If you sat here with a little bit of willingness, it would derail that train of self-will, at least for that freaking hour. Maybe when you left, you wouldn't get back on it. Yeah. Until the pause takes over, the real pause. I was with, like, quote-unquote normal people last night doing a talk. When I first saw them, I first started doing talks without AA people 3 years ago or something, you know? And I thought I didn't really feel much draw to speak because I thought they were fine. You know what I mean? They haven't been in prison lately. You know, they look like they got it made. But then by sitting there for a while, I realized they have a much subtler disease called spiritual seeking, in a way. And I figure they need a program like Spiritual Seekers Anonymous. And they probably need Spiritual Seeker Rehabs and shit. And I bet it's going to happen. Because it's an insidious disease. Because they want to have something they don't think they are. Yeah. And it's suffering. I watched it last. I've gotten really keen on it. You know, it's really freaking painful. So we're really lucky because a lot of them haven't gotten their asses kicked. If there's any requirements necessary to open up to this truth, we fulfilled them. Seriously, we don't need any more purification. You know what I mean? We're like burnt like toast. All we got to do is have a little willingness, and that willingness will go a long way. I mean, there's a lot of air to lift out balloons up there. You know, a lot of juice. So it's an amazing program there. I want to thank you for coming tonight. Any questions? Yes.
Before we continue, we're going to pass the basket. And this isn't a $1 each person basket. This is a basket to help Paul with his expenses for getting here and while he's here. So please do what you can.
And when, if you can, it's all right. Yeah.
And if you don't have anything, that's fine.
Just give me a hearty handshake. Yeah. If you like, you can ask the question too.
Oh, sure. You talk about identifying as a self, and I find that that's the first thing that happens even just before I open my eyes. Like, it starts even before, and the train is gone when the eyes are open. So I just wanted to, like, you know.
But that's the point. We're just attempting to introduce a possibility. I have total faith in mind, yeah? If the mind starts entertaining, it's not that. It's not the speaker of those thoughts. Yeah? It's not the haver of those thoughts. Then immunity will grow. And how to keep that immunity safe until it grows strong enough? The AA way of life is good for us. Yeah.
Well, just a shot in the dark here, but you wouldn't happen to have those things on CD, would you? All that stuff?
There's all on there. ZenBitchSlap.com. Okay. The website, ZenBitchSlap.com. They're all free downloads. Yeah, go to it.
Nice.
There's hundreds of them now. Yeah.
Hey, Paul and Frank.
Yeah. Hey, Frank.
How you doing? Thanks for speaking today. I got a lot out of it. I really identified with the way you said that, even though it's seemingly possible that my spirituality is not there at the moment, and it always is, brought a lot of comfort and insight, but I feel since the compulsion has been lifted and as a result of doing the steps, I become less focused on myself and trying to focus on being of service and helps others. And I feel that it was nothing that I did that brought me to this place. So therefore, possibly, this is where I could be thinking too much, that I might have a purpose, and that purpose is to help others through my experience, sharing my experience. And when I get caught up in the fear of life, trying to decide how to take care of myself because things are not going my way, and I get overwhelmed, and I try to come back into the moment and see for guidance or relief, you know, in what perhaps what direction I should go.
That sounds good.
But like, where do I look? Like, where do I stop? Like, where I have a hard time going from what's the fear where I have to do something to realizing that everything's okay. And
well, do an inventory. Yeah? When the fear arises, do an inventory of it. So you'll see the inventory will produce an answer, but it won't be yours. Yeah? So it's sort of like putting a string on a mouse's tail. You follow it back to its hole. That four-column inventory,
right.
That's how we deal with things in AA.
Right, right.
We write, it's like, it says like it's sex. It says sex is like everything, every other problem in AA. We write about it. So you write about it. Because the mind, what you're fighting, what's playing up there is its solutions. Yeah? That's what it's doing. It's playing God. It's managing. That's the disease. That's what's defeating us. So when we take another process to get to a conclusion other than our own mental process, that's what AA is. It's supplying another way to get to an answer that won't be your answer. Now, you can claim it after you see it because it will really ring true, but it wasn't produced by your head. It was produced by writing it out the way AA lays it out. That's the whole point of AA. And then the doing the service is the key, because it's almost a guarantee of getting out of that oneself, yeah? Which opens you up to the influence of that other power. Yeah? See, if the mental state isn't diminished, then it can eclipse or block out the sunlight of the spirit, like he says. The mental state is like a cheap paper shade, but if it's pulled down, it can block out the sunlight of the spirit. We're trying to diminish this mental state, yeah? To make it smaller so the light just naturally comes in. I don't think we're trying to produce a spiritual condition. I really don't. I believe we are a spiritual condition. I think we're attempting to allow this program of sound principles to diminish a mental condition. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it's sufficiently diminished and it stabilizes, then you have a daily reprieve from alcoholism, because you got light in your life now. Alcoholism works best in the dark, bro. You know that. It likes to be alone. It likes to be thinking about it. Yes, that's where it cooks up. That's its little petri dish, its little laboratory. Well, let's go home and think about this. Please don't. That's the worst thing you can do. Go home and think about it. You think you're going to concoct some really terrible elixir. So you're on the way and you're shining pretty good. So there you go. It's working. That's the point. The light gets liberated. It's not built. It's like Michelangelo supposedly said when he would carve a statue, he says, I just knock all the stone off the statue, basically. The statue's already there, but the 12 steps are like knocking the stone off so you see it. Yeah? So you live it. Yeah. And that's my deep felt experience over the years, and watching others over the years. It's a paring down. It's an economizing. There's not many additions. It's more subtraction. It's more relieving, letting go, this and that. And then they're shiny and bright. Even if there still can be assholes, but there's a shiny brightness still there. Especially, it may not come out in the day-to-day, but in the group, they'll be used to magnify that loving presence. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's working for me, 24 years. I go to more meetings now than I ever do. Yeah. Except when I was first sober. Because I was pretty extreme, you know, like 2 or 3 a day. Now it's 4 or 5 a week. Any other time I'm not speaking this, I go to an AA meeting. Because I just love the presence in the room. I love to listen to people. I learn a lot. I listen to what they share, and I can tell where it's coming from. And if it's coming from selfing, I get very clear. I don't want to go come from there. There's nothing good comes out of there for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it leads to the truth, I can sense it in them. And it revitalizes my own conviction. Yeah, yeah. You have met people who have a lot of time. Some of them have a really good bassy timber, you know? They've been rubbing against this program for so long, they're like, bark is shiny, you know? They got a nice spiritual condition going. I really like that. That's the program. You know, it just rubs the bark off and you get to that shiny area. And it's going to be here. It's totally reliable, AA. It's always available. It's incredible the service people have done for us. Because remember, in 1935, prior to that, people were being lobotomized. Uncle Fred was in the attic, you know? People were going to prison just because they couldn't control their drinking and use. Now we have a solution for the first time. Since probably the beginning of time, you read Psalms, they talk about winos. In the Old Testament, they do. What are you going to do with them? They couldn't deal with them back then either. Sure, swear to God. We are like, you know, we're like, what are you going to do with them? You know, now there's a way of life that works for us. Right? That's it. If you like, come back tomorrow. Now, you got another question?
One question. Sometimes I've found, at least for me and for some sponsees, that we can use the tools of AA. Like self trying to get out of self, especially with things like 10 steps. And I wonder, what are your thoughts on that? How to avoid that?
What do you mean, going a little too much?
It's like it's like ego, trying to get rid of ego sometimes.
Yeah,
how
yeah.
You see someone in that, you just don't know how to help them or not do that.
Well, when I worked with some people where you had to tell them not to do any more inventory.
Yeah.
They were just going over the minutiae of every little fucking thing to see their role in it. It got a little too much, you know?
Mm.
So the point is, you know, there's an old story about a monk in a monastery and the abbot, yeah? And a new abbot comes and takes over the monastery. And one of the first things he wants the monk, the librarian, to go down and do new translations of the old scriptures. And so the new monk goes, okay, and he goes down into the caverns and he gets the candles and he's working day and night. And then one day he just stops and rushes home with this thing and he knocks on the abbot's door and he says, they made a mistake, the word is celebrate. Not celibate. Celebrate. Sometimes if you get too much into the word, you'll miss the meaning, the spirit of it. Yeah, yeah. So for me, the program is to be free. Yeah? That's its point. For me, the greatest value of an inventory is when you don't need to do anymore.
Yeah?
When you don't have any thought, when you don't have any fear or resentments, then it's like, that's the greatest part of the inventory process, is when you don't have to do it anymore. Yeah, you're freed of it. Yeah, it's great. we have a cult in the back east, back west where I am, the pod people. It's sort of like a cult in AA. And what they do is they write all day their fears. Yeah, so I used to do a 4-step workshop, and sometimes they'd send some of their heavy hitters to sort of fight it out with me, you know. And so they said, why are you telling these people not, you know, this stuff? They should be writing. I said, listen, my idea is to get to the point where I have no fear, so I don't have to write anything about it. That's the promise of AA to me. It's freedom from fear. Yeah, it's nice to have a method to deal with it, but to me, all methods are the best thing. The best use of them is when you can put them down, you know? So I don't want to learn how to deal with fear my whole life. I want to be free of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be living under an atmosphere of anxiety all day. That's I want right. to have be living in a faith mind, in a sense of okayness. Yeah, I believe that's what AA is on offer for. Yeah, and to me, that's the most attractive thing about a member, is when they're free. Yeah? So, you know, I would try to leaven their ardor, their extreme ardor, yeah? Because, again, it could be selfie. Back off. This is, it's, to me, you ever have a, like, if you have a car and the carburetor, you know, and it dies, yeah? And so you could stop and you're trying to start, it won't start. And then you open the thing up, you take the air filter off, you look at the carburetor, and then you get some gas and you put a couple of drops of gas in. And then you have the guy turn on the thing, and then it catches. And then what do? Keep pouring the gas in because it worked? Yeah?
No.
It's going to flood the car. Yeah? It's there to be a catalyst or a primer. For me, the 12 steps in the program are to diminish a mental state. When the state is diminished enough, the spiritual state lives and thrives in and of itself. It keeps revigorating itself, yeah, by the living of it. You know what I mean? It doesn't need our help after a while. It's like an eternal light that's feeding itself. It doesn't need an outside source anymore. It just needs to be uncovered somewhat. And that's what we're doing. So to realize when the point uncovering has been sufficient enough to get on with the celebration of it. Yeah? So the principles are now living in you. You're not practicing them anymore. They become like a ink tattoo instead of a henna tattoo. Yeah? They're in. They're a part of how you live now. That's success to me. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't do much at all anymore, really. Go to meetings. I help sponsees just like I always do. I don't do as many service commitments because I'd rather have someone else have the chance to do them. I did H&I for 11 years, you know. I don't need to do that. I don't need the secretary meetings anymore. Let newcomers do that, yeah? But I'm available, and I practice the same principles I was introduced to 24 years ago by living them, yeah? So, yeah. And it works, obviously, for a lot of people. So is that it? Yes? Come back tomorrow night if you like.
Sure.
We'll be here tomorrow night, I think, at 7. Thank you.